You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome, my friends, to the Johnny Vedmore Show today on, well, today's News Talk TNT. We're back again. I hope you all enjoyed your weekend and it was all everything that you had hoped for. For me, it was very fun. I enjoyed it, except all of the work I had to do, which was most of it, to be honest. But I was at the Gaza protest that was happening in Cardiff on Saturday. And it was a fantastic display of solidarity and a clear call for peace in my home city. The same sort of protests are happening all around the country right now, all around the Western world. Everywhere you go, there is a new protest rising. There were an extremely small contingent of Israeli protesters at the event, and they were very peaceful too. So it's not like there was any complaints. The police were very orderly. Everything went swimmingly, and everybody got to have a little bit of their say. There was one man who ran up while some Gaza people who were on the Palestinian side were talking with some people on the Israeli side, and they were having a nice chat, and this guy came up and said, "Leave him alone! Leave him alone!" And it didn't make any sense. It just seemed like he wanted there to be trouble where there was no trouble. But it was very good. I was glad to see that people can protest without there being any too much anger or violence going on, of course. When I go to an event such as this, I am trying to function in various roles, though, and I am concentrating on different activities because I do a lot of different activities. The police auditor in me starts looking at the type of police present at such an event. I assess their manner and demeanor. I scan the members of the police who I may have had interactions with previously, because they're usually one or two around. And this past weekend, they all seemed well behaved and well organized, and they all kept themselves to themselves, which is what you want to see at a protest. You want to see the police just there to interrupt if anything big or bad goes on. There were one or two disruptors hanging out on the sidelines, attempting to spoil the discourse on occasion, like I mentioned. But it was a very well-managed event, and it was heavily weighted with a calm female majority, which is also good for such protests. I had the pleasure to meet one or two of the main speakers who lead such Cardiff events, and hopefully I'll get one of them at least on the Johnny Vedmore Show sometime soon. The one lady, Nellie, has become a bit of an icon in the region. There were also fellow independent auditors lingering around at the event, including Out and About with Dave, who's got a lovely little channel where he just walks around at such events, and it's very nice. He's a very nice guy indeed. But there is another angle in which I view any protest which I approach with a camera. Firstly, I've noted the constituent parts of the event. I'm able to separate all of those functionaries into their own paradigms of probable actions and behaviours. I know the roles of each of the different coloured police, and by that I mean the ones who wear the blue vests and the ones who wear the yellow vests and the ones who wear normal uniforms, etc. I have a good understanding of the leaders of the protest, and I've watched them before at this event and others. I hear the tone of their voices and the pointedness of their rhetoric. I see the bulk of the protesters with volunteers and helpers mingling about, and I see the counter-protesters too, and all the alternative organisers and speakers on their side as well. I'm able to see the dynamics a little better once these moving parts are identified, and then I also start to see the previously unseen elements amongst the protests. There are other forces at work within the rank and file of any modern-day protest movement. It is a copy-and-paste tactic to co-opt any protest group, and the constituent part should definitely be aware of who these people are. That's where I come in, and that's where Out and About with Dave come in, and that's where other indie journalists are best utilized. Personally, my experience over the past 5 years has taught me not to be naive. Every movement has been co-opted at some level these days. It never means that all is lost, though. As long as the core of the protest movement remains true, the protest shall continue. But we must be aware that the enemy is always at the gates. And I will say that there were one or two enemies at this protest movement. And when I say enemies, I mean people who everybody thinks is a friend, but is actually working for the other side. Now, it's coming. It's here. It's almost just around the corner. And some of you in the chat are going to be coming along too. The weekend True Festival is almost upon us. If you would like to see all your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up, because this weekend is a weekend to see it. The Weekend True Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemirani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizia, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to bring is a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit, as quickly as you can, weekendtruefestival.co.uk. Don't hang around. Only a limited number of places are still available, and it's going on this weekend. Also, did you know that there are many ways to listen to TNT? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. We've got you covered on TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past, and when it breaks. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, Scottish First Minister and SNP leader Humza Yousaf announced his resignation on Monday, surprise, surprise, after failing to gather enough support to survive a confidence vote. Here with your story, join me now, is TNT news producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Tell us more about Humza Yousaf, please.
Sure. It appears politicians lately, especially out in Europe, don't seem to last very long lately. I think he was in office for just a year, if I'm not mistaken. So, Mr. Yousaf, I guess he was crying when he announced that he was quitting as the head of the pro-independence SNP, Scottish National Party, after scrapping a coalition agreement, a failed one with the Scotland's Greens. And then, of course, he failed to secure enough support in order to survive votes of no confidence against him expected later this week. So he said, I'm out. Yousaf was born to Pakistani immigrants in Glasgow, and he built an infamous reputation as a woke activist politician going into the elections in 2023. His rabid pro-immigration stance and consistent arguments in favor of DEI, that stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, of course, should have been a red flag to the Scottish public. However, with an increasingly progressive voting population, Yousaf narrowly scored a victory. And from the beginning, he was admonishing the quote-unquote whiteness of the Scottish government, which is kind of weird since Scotland is 96% white. For most people, logic would dictate that having a majority white government makes perfect sense given Scotland's demographics. That is something that Yousaf and his progressive ilk have set out to change. At the beginning of 2024, the former first minister, sought to launch a pro-migrant propaganda campaign, claiming that open immigration policies lead to economic benefits for Scotland. Well, as with all politicians that make this assertion, he has offered no concrete statistics to support that theory. Beyond his insistence of going against the growing public opposition in Scotland to more migrants being allowed into the country, Yousaf's biggest mistake was something that I've reported about here, the passage of his now wildly unpopular so-called quote-unquote Hate Crime Act. The law, which recently went into effect, criminalized many forms of speech, including criticism or skepticism of gender fluid theory and trans identity. Misgendering and misuse of a trans person's pronouns could now land a Scottish citizen in the slammer. In response, the Scottish public, laughingly, they flooded law enforcement agencies with fake calls accusing various trans activists and even political leaders of various hate crimes, including Yusuf himself. Police were so overwhelmed by the paperwork that any efforts to enforce the law has ground to a halt. So not going well there. Let's see. I believe before he resigned, just 29% of Scottish National Party voters believe Yusuf is doing a good job, while 36% think he has been poor in office. Consequently, his popularity among his own voters is now -7, down from +14 in January. That is a massive drop. And then let's see, as a reminder here, the police received 8,000 hate crime complaints in just the first week of the law coming into play, which would equal to more than the annual total of all hate crime reports for all previous years. So, yeah, I'd suggest that he's just not a popular guy, not popular policies, and he knows it, and he's stepping down before they kick him out, Johnny. But what do you think?
Yeah, there was a big sea change when Gordon Brown basically caused such a hatred amongst Scottish people. Amazing, a Scottish person. His leadership in the UK after Tony Blair really caused the Scottish to seize the moment, the SNP, the Scottish National Party, to seize the moment. And I remember this big flood of support for the SNP. Suddenly, if you wanted freedom, if you wanted peace, if you wanted justice, if you wanted things to be fair, you had to vote for the Scottish National Party. They'll give you everything. They'll sort out all of your problems. But the truth is, of course, all of they did is apply the same woke agenda that Labour would have applied if they had still been in charge in Scotland. So really, I remember this, and it was for years. It was possibly from about 2010 especially to about 2015. The surge in SNP support was amazing, and the supporters were ravenous, blind, and could not see what they were putting in power at all. So it's not a surprise to see it all blow up in the Scottish people's faces once they get what they think they want, and then it turns out to be exactly the same flavor, if not even more globalist in texture and quality than what they had before, because everybody from Nicola Sturgeon, every part of that party from the previous hierarchy who was in charge before, have all been pushing to incorporate globalist ideals, to be part of Europe, and to be part of a bigger infrastructure that will take all power away from Scottish people and will end up like this. The hate crime bill, the hate crime legislation, was just always going to fall flat on its ass, mainly because I'm in a country now, in Britain, half of the robberies and thefts aren't even investigated. They don't even investigate them anymore. They get the report in and they don't even bother looking into them because they haven't got enough staff anyway because of police cuts, a savage completed police cuts that have come under, of course, things like Conservative and SNP rule. What are they meant to do? Are they meant to just, go round and arrest all of those 8,000 people immediately? That's kind of what people thought these laws would be like, but all they're going to do is show that it's incapable, the infrastructure and what they have in place is incapable of policing such matters. I'm not surprised at all. I think this has been long in the coming, and there's going to be a swing back towards Labour and Conservatives as the SNP flame dies and the lie of the SNP is completely and utterly revealed. Does it say who's likely to take over as head of Scottish government, or does it just leave that blank at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not privy to the politics out there, but I saw mention of a competitor a lady, what was her name? Oh gosh, I'm completely lost it. There was, I guess, Kate Forbes, if that makes any sense.
100%, she'll be just another one of the woke brigade, and you know, and this is just all part of the agenda. Not surprised to hear about any of that, Ruckus. Not surprised to hear about any of that at all. Just same as it ever was, same as it ever will be. And from now on, I think we can expect this to be more ever present. And we'll be speaking to my first guest soon, who will, you know, I think he's shining a light on the type of people that the SNP would bow down to and give their country away to, along with all of the politicians nowadays. You know, like I say, Scotland has slowly been moving towards globalism, and with globalism comes divisions, so that they can divide your society and take it by force. Thanks for the news there, Ruckus. I take it you're back with us in the second half?
Of course. We'll see you then.
Awesome. See you soon. You're listening to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
You have to be very, very careful with pregnant women when giving them drugs, or women that are breastfeeding, because those drugs will be carried in the breast milk. So why are biological men being given drugs to produce milk, breast milk, that's being fed to the babies in the premature baby unit, SCABU? And they've actually said it's as good as women's milk. I don't see how that is possible, because those drugs that will stimulate the pituitary and everything else that this man is taking are going to be in that breast milk. What could possibly go wrong?
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. My first guest in this hour of talk is Jakob Nordengard, and he's a Swedish researcher, an author, a musician known for his work on various topics, including sustainability, technology, and social change. He holds a PhD in technology and social change from Linköping University and has been involved in academia as well as public debate. Jakob has written on subjects such as political history of biofuels in the European Union, the role of the Rockefeller family in the shaping climate policy, and the implication of digital IDs and technocracy on society, which of course everybody knows is of great interest to me. He is also recognized for his critical views on climate change narratives, same as me, tick, and has participated in discussions and conferences related to this field of study. And I would suggest after the show, if people want to go and have a look at some of his conferences and talks, lectures, it's well worth it. In addition to his academic and literary contributions, Jakob has engaged in music, same as me, further showcasing his diverse interests and talents. His work often intersects with themes of futurism, environment, and governance, reflecting the deep engagement with contemporary global issues. You can follow him on X at Jakob Nordengard, that's Nordangard, or visit his website, jakobnordengard.se. Thank you for joining me today, Jakob. I appreciate your work and your breadth of knowledge. Let us begin, because I have a lot of questions, my friend. How are you today?
Fine. As awesome. Fine you can be in a mad world.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Indeed. The United Nations Leaders Pact for the Future is upon us, and everyone needs to know how serious this is. Can you please tell my audience what the Pact for the Future is?
Yes, this year in September, we're going to be a big United Nations summit called Summit of the Future. And during this meeting, they will have an agreement signed, and that's the pact for the future. This pact is about turbocharging the sustainability agenda, the Agenda 2030. And they have worked on this for a couple of years, not to the knowledge of the public, of course, but a lot of influential think tanks and also other stakeholders, like the member states have been working on this. So they will have this document prepared for this big meeting, and this will have, if things go as they have thought about it, can have serious consequences for the rest of us.
Indeed. And this is a marriage of the UN Agenda 2030 and the Great Reset, really. Were they always meant to be the same agenda, do you think?
Yes, I think so. Because, I mean, this has been prepared for a long time. The official story is that they, after this, I mean, we had the Great Reset. And after the Great Reset Declaration, they had meetings at the United Nations about how could we make a better system, because COVID-19 has showed us that the systems are not fit for this anymore. So they decided in September 2020 that they, the Secretary General would have a report ready within a year, it was called Our Common Agenda. And that's where this process started. But if you look into the prehistory, there was a big commission that was ready in 2015-2016, called the Gambari-Albright Commission, about security and the emerging risks and how are we going to solve this. And this was supported by like Carnegie Endowment and these big influential actors and their funding and their money. And they said in this report they wanted a meeting in 2020 about how can we create a better UN, for the future. So everything was kind of prepared. And they had also a couple of think tanks involved in the years before 2020. And then the pandemic hit and everything started to roll. These actors had everything prepared and could just put in their solutions, like politics usually work.
Yeah, of course. They love to have a crisis or something along those lines that helps them to, and I've seen this. I mean, I've done a bit of work on the cyber polygon exercise through the World Economic Forum, and how that is one of course the many different types of crisis that's a potential crisis to emerge in the future, that they've obviously mapped out all of the ways that they can take control of a society. But we'll talk about that a little bit more after the news, because we've got a short 30 second news break coming up. So you're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Big news, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Kazakhstan has denied reports that it sold old Soviet-era war planes potentially intended for use in the Ukraine conflict. According to a report by Kiev Post, the U.S. was the highest bidder for 81 aircraft through offshore entities, purchasing them for a total of $1.5 million. Jill Stein, associated with the U.S. Green Party, was arrested at a pro-Palestinian rally at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I just looking across, Mr. Moose in the chat says, correction, it's Cyber Polyclown. Not Cyber Polygon. What are we thinking? Of course it is. It is very, it does feel a lot like that, doesn't it, Jakob? Now, one of the most worrying aspects of this agenda is that these technocrats are designing emergency powers, like we were talking, which can take control away from elected governments. What do you think they will use as an excuse to take control of our world? Will it be another pandemic, climate crisis, cyber pandemic, or does it? Is it too late and does it even matter anymore? They've just got so many options.
They are prepared, and they have this policy brief where they explain the idea behind this emergency platform. So, and it's a very, very big part of this pact. So they really, really want this platform, and in this policy brief we describe 7 crises that could be, that they have counted on, and that is, as you said, climate and pandemics, and also a biological agent, and they have this with a space event. That is interesting to whatever that can be, but they also have interruptions in global trade and so on, and cyber attacks, of course. But the last of them is called a black swan, and a black swan could be anything that they haven't calculated on, but maybe it's like some of these people know.
Yeah,
they just don't want to tell us about it. So they've discussed this poly crisis scenario with a lot of crisis at the same time, and I mean they know that we can handle one or maybe two crises, but if you get to 3 crises at the same time, it will collapse things. It's like it's like you as a human. If you have a personal crisis, if you have 3 things that's happening at the same time, you will break down. So, and it's kind of the same with the global society. So they know that, but one can speculate that this is about bringing in the new system in this crisis, big crisis event. And then they have to be prepared. That's why we will have this kind of groups. We have this emergency platform, and this consists of important actors. You have people from the UN system, some member states, and big corporations and NGOs and so on, that are prepared for this. emergency. And when the trigger comes, they will act in unison with and have protocols that we work with. So no one has the right to say, I don't believe in this, how we are doing this. No, they should stick to the manuscript to do this. And so they're preparing a couple of these groups. You can also see, I mean, they haven't the decision. It isn't decided yet. But I mean, of course, they have prepared this. So we have groups that are prepared for this. When we have signed the document and everything, things will be take shape and be ready for the next step in this.
Indeed. They like to take the next step, don't they? Someone in the chat, also Johnny Dollar, just mentioning that he loves a deep purple on your wall. Just wants to say that quickly. The people involved in creating this agenda, you're talking about them creating groups, and some of the groups they've created include high-level Council on Foreign Relations members such as Anne-Marie Slaughter, who I've come across a few times, and Rockefeller Foundation's Donald Kabruka. Are these the type of characters who are the real stakeholders who will have all the control under Klaus Schwab's stakeholder capitalism?
Yes, I mean, these are key institutions that are involved in this. And of course, these groups goes back to the roundtable groups in the late 19th century and those who set up the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute of International Affairs and Carnegie and everything. So it's when you look upon it, it's like it's a continuation of this work that we started like 100 years ago. And now we are reaching the finale of this. It's really like an end game. And Rockefeller Foundation is very important in this. And I followed them. I wrote a book about the Rockefeller and the involvement in climate change and so on. And it's like all of these actors have their own areas. So. So players like Bill Gates, it's with the pandemic and so on. And so they have, but they are connected together through this, especially the Council on Foreign Relations is very, very crucial and important in setting up this. You can follow, they are always involved in this. And then also in this high level panel, you find a character like, Farman Shanmugaratnam, that is the president of Singapore, and he's on the board of directors of World Economic Forum. These are the ones that really are doing something in this high-level panel. We have a lot of other people that are just sits on in the panel to make. They don't really do anything. They don't give information. They just sit there on the meetings and said, yes, that's a good idea. And
again, on the chat, there's Dark Commissions asking a question here to us as he's listening. He's saying, listening to Gerald Celente, the global economy will crash this year if the price of oil, which is rising, reaches $130 a barrel. Is this big enough crisis to trip the switch all on its own? Will it be just the one crisis, do you think, Jakob, that will flick the switch? Or is it going to be a combination that we'll see them really be able to move up the agenda at high speed, move on with it at high speed?
Yes, as I said before, I think it will be a polycrisis with a couple of crises working together. Because they have discussed this a lot of scenarios have been done, and we have the Great Transition report that was published in 2002. I have written a lot about this, that talks about how can we create this new system with a world authority. And they talked about this, a lot of crises that will come, and then in the end, it will be a general crisis. And that will trigger the global reform era. And that's, excellent. I mean, that's what they are doing at the United Nations, the reform of the system.
Definitely true. Would we, so with that reforming of the system, would we benefit, economically speaking, from maintaining the price-based economic system that we have rather than the resource-based economic system that these big players have designed to replace the current system? Is what we've got now better for us, and what they want to replace it with worse for us? That's the question.
I think the current system is better. We know that the system we have is doomed because of, I mean, that's what's happening all the time. They have to reset economic systems on a 100-year basis or something like that. So they do that. It often comes a war to create this. But this time, what we get will not be beneficial for us, because now we have a technocratic system. It's built with technology, with surveillance and everything that they didn't have the last time they did a kind of a reset. In the new system, you won't be able to have any savings and so on. You can't build your own fortune. So you will have your allowances and credit, and they will track your everything you do with your money, and they can refuse you to use money, and so it's a whole other system than before.
Yeah, it sounds like the pocket money my mum and dad used to give me with conditions when I was young. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like we're children and they are acting like mummy and daddy in this sense. So we're going to take another quick break before we get to have a long chat about all of this again. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
From weather and traffic reports to news of political developments, we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide the news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
So many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
Absolutely.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked in the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, ce que je ne m'attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
Last week, Brandon met a girl on a dating app. One day after work, he finally found the courage to ask her out. No answer. He started to panic. Was he being too pushy? Maybe it was too...
Hey, sorry I didn't respond. I was driving. I would love to go on a date. How does tonight sound?
Brandon tried to play it cool, but inside he knew. A girl so smart, so responsible. She must be a keeper.
You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm here with Jakob Nordengard, and we're talking about a lot of the agenda that's been put in place to put us in chains, of course. So, Jakob, do you think that their key objective to have zero carbon emissions by around 2050 will damage the planet or protect the planet? Or will it just be used to fuse the environmental and health agendas in a way that will allow them to enact emergency measures whenever they want to exact authority or control over the world? What do you think?
It won't help the environment. I mean, this is really about the management of life, because that's what carbon is, and the gas of life and everything. So, and we can also see the kind of solutions that they are bringing in to mitigate the climate, and with huge wind power farms and so on, and the solar panels, things that don't do any good for the environment, only for those who profit on this, and also can sell backup power like gas and so on. So it's nothing, it won't do us any good, and in the end it's all about control of resources and population. That was this zero talk really is about.
Yeah, I was listening to one of your talks that you were giving, one of the lectures you were giving, and even trying to use logic left me cross-eyed when I was trying to like work out what they were saying. So are the people, here we go, are the people who are unable to afford to eat today actually benefiting from the poverty of the future generations, like they're putting forward? In other words, even though we clearly have issues feeding the world today, should we be starving ourselves to prevent the future starvation, like they're kind of like insinuating?
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, it's just mind-blowing with the thinking they have. It's just so mad and deranged. And also we talk a lot about future generations, and also, so we are supposed not to eat what other people will eat tomorrow, as Christiana Figueres has said. She was the head of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and so it's like they want to have, but that will give certain people power to decide what we can eat and when we can eat. And those who decides this are people that not really, I mean, how do these people live? I have shown, for example, they have this we have a big sort of an alliance called the Global Commons Alliance that are working with this future agenda and how to make us sustainable. And this organization, they have a part that is called the System Change Lab. And the System Change Lab is kind of, they're calculating how much can we people use to not infringe on the rights of future generations, and then you get your quota. But the thing is, the ones who are funding this System Change Lab, one of them is Jeff Bezos, Amazon. How do he live? Do he live under a rock in the forest? No, he has the biggest yacht in the world. And I mean, mansions all over the place. He has his own rocket going to space. I mean, this is people that they tell us that we can't eat, but themselves. The footprint they leave behind, I mean, they could feed a whole African country, probably. So it's that kind of people that are deciding over our future. So it doesn't
It's just stupid. And
it's kind of made up. They make their own disillusion. I think they even believe it, because I mean, when I first started investigating Jeff Bezos, there was book after book that I read that said Jeff Bezos and his wife put in a load of books in the back of their car, and they created Amazon in their old secondhand station wagon, and they created this mythos. And then I said, no, I don't believe any of that. So I went back and researched it and discovered that he was part of D.E. Shaw. He actually made it up to vice president before he started setting up Amazon, and D.E. Shaw was 10%, and it's one part of the 90s, it was 10% of the New York Stock Exchange. That's how much it ran. And it gamed out and mapped out the future, just like you're saying, like the Future Labs, like these other creations do. They were mapping out the future technology that was going to come in, and they had worked out how to basically put their leaders in charge of what was going to happen once the internet came. And this was like Jeff Bezos went to the Shaw in about 88, I think it was 87, 88, when it had first really set up. And he was him and his partner there, his work partner there, was a guy called Hazley Miner. And Hazley Miner created download.com when he left D.E. Shaw, and Amazon got created by Jeff Bezos. So these guys, they're handed on a plate the keys to the kingdom, and then say, you can't do all of these things we can do because you don't have the keys to the kingdom, and you'd ruin the kingdom if you had them, while we watch the kingdom getting ruined around us. So they create this illusion, they create an imaginary world that they come from, they create their birth story, their hero's journey, and they feed it to everyone as though it's true. And of course, this is something we see over and over again. So that's really interesting, the way you present that, especially when you're talking about Jeff Bezos. Yeah, what does he do? He makes up his reality. That's what they're all doing. They're making up our reality as they go along. So these big organizations, we're talking about data stuff. The big organizations manage, monitor, and identify future risks. Do they then build infrastructure which allows them to benefit from the global existential risk they've identified at the expense of both future generations and the people alive today? Is that what's really going on with these organizations, do you think?
Yes, of course. That's what they have in mind, because they talk about crisis and opportunity. Because with every crisis, it comes an opportunity for business and investment and so on. So that's how they have operated for, I mean, the whole 20th century. That's the idea. That's the Rockefeller idea, for example. So, and they know this, and so this will give them even more powers. And this thinking also has been in something called the World Future Society, where we had a conference in the 70s that we actually called Crisis and Opportunity. So it's yes, their idea in the World Future Society, it was, how can we control the future? Because that is power. If you know what will happen, you will have the power, because you can for one thing, you can benefit on investments and so on, if you know what kind of crisis will show up, and also you can prevent things from happen that you think is bad. If you have all these tools, and that's kind of what they trying to achieve. And this UN agenda, this pact for the future, it's a part of this. It's a part of creating what I've actually written a book called The Digital World Brain, because that's what it is. They want to a digital world brain where all data is fed into this system, and they will have information. They will have like a digital crystal ball where they can watch and see what's happening and manipulate us and to shape the future they want.
Yeah, so what you're saying is a large component of their plan is the creation of massive data collection and surveillance to better map out the potential risk we face in the future. So, of course, they can manipulate it. What is their future? Because they have the Future Labs network, which you've talked about. And there's so many organizations and so many networks and so many side projects they've got going on. Yeah. You come across a new dystopian organization that's going to change your entire life and keep you in a cage every second day when you research this sort of stuff. So what is the Futures Lab network? And will this be their central hub for mass data harvesting and surveillance eventually, do you think?
Yes, I think the Futures Lab, it's mentioned a lot in these policy briefs that they have released. And that is especially when you talk about safeguarding the future generations, that's a part of it. This Futures Lab, and they will have a network. It's kind of a place where you gather all the data, and it's will be under operated by United Nations, and so we will gather the data and in different locations of the world with Future Labs, and then we will send it to a central and analyze all the data so that they can see and what kind of risks are on the horizon. Because one big thing with this, when I talk about it, they want to issue global risk reports every 5 years.
So
in that way, we know what we have to work with.
Yeah,
that's based on all this data that we gather.
So some of the events that we talked about earlier, we identified, and they talk about, would utterly change our worlds, including like major climate events, future pandemics akin to COVID, cyber pandemics such as we've seen planned during the previously mentioned cyber polygon events, as you mentioned, biological weapons attack or warfare, major events in outer space, as you were alluding to earlier, which of course, I mean, they could just make up anything and claim that it happened in outer space and we wouldn't be able to prove otherwise anyway. How can we stop them from making these events happen themselves so they can seize more power or such, or just to stop such false flag events being enacted? Can we actually do anything to stop this, or have we put all our eggs in their baskets?
I think this is the system that they are trying to construct. I mean, it's fragile. And I mean, it's built on a huge amount of energy that has to feed into it, and it's complex, and it's and the thing is, we have other things that they don't have at their possession, like truth and empathy and so on. So, and I think it's like when they try to build up perfect system, it naturally starts a movement that is grassroots. People are waking up and understand these things. We are communicating. We have ideas are spreading, and that they are afraid of these ideas. They are afraid of us people starting to understand this, but they can't stop it. And that's why we try to, a big part of this global new pact, it's the countering of disinformation, misinformation, infodemics. And that's essentially trying to prevent truth. And they think if they have this system with all people connected to it, they will can manage it. But it won't work in the end. I mean, it's just a matter of time. And it's like when you create this advanced systems, or it's like when you have conquered the whole world, created your empire, the day you have conquered it, that's the day it starts to decay. and fall. And that happens all the time. And actually, we have discussed this. I've written about it in my Rockefeller book about how they have these ideas on, because we know that big empires have fallen before. It's like a natural law. But this time we will do it better. We will be better prepared this time. We will have a system that managed to make us maintain our power during this very, very hard period. So that's what kind of thinking this. About it.
Yeah, they know how to do this. We're coming up to the end of the hour. Little Carol said, what's the point of gathering data if they're just trying to kill everyone off? Well, just so they could better kill everyone off. That's basically it. Thank you, Jakob Nordengard, for coming on. Really appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
Anytime. Right, don't go anywhere to the people out there. Why not go to tntradio.live and get in the chat? You're listening to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT.